Hey guys, this is a brand new season of Marketing Monday coming your way. On this episode, it's a little mini episode for you. We're going to talk about season two coming up. We're going to talk about moving our marketing focus to themed attractions. And I'm here with Philip, by the way. Philip, say hello.
Hello.
And we want to hear from you guys. Plus, we got a little interview with Scott coming up. All that and more on this next little mini-sode of Marketing Monday.
Well, Tyler, it has been a while, but we're back.
It has been almost a year, but that means season two is approaching.
So let's talk about first a little bit of where we have shifted so that our listeners kind of have context. So we're not just two random crazy people talking. So Tyler, why don't you talk a little bit about your new job and what you're doing and how that can benefit the show.
Yeah, well, I am now the digital marketing manager at Red Rock Austin. That is an advertising agency here in Austin, Texas. A lot of haunted attraction owners may know that because it is a kind of sister company or works in relation with Fearworm Hauntvertising. Both advertising agencies and both are awesome. I moved here in August, so it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of hard work. But no, Red Rock is great, and I'm loving it here in Austin. I'm loving it at Red Rock. But yeah, that's part of the reason why we took a little break for a while. Not only in the beginning of the year did I graduate from college with my bachelor's degree, I have this new job, so a lot of things were happening. But Philip, I hear you have a new job.
Yes. Tyler just sounds so excited. I am the business relations director now, working with Gantam Lighting and Controls. And Gantam Lighting and Controls, haunters should also be aware of as, I guess, one of the world's leading manufacturers of micro LEDs. So we produce a lot of the lights that are in themed attractions. Disney World, Universal, Knott's, all of those attractions kind of use some of our lights. So we have different avenues to our company, different departments. I specifically kind of work in the realm in between marketing and public relations and brand development. And I specifically work with the Torch technology, which was the 2016 THEA recipient for best technology on a low budget. So I'm excited for that and to be working with Gantam. And now Gantam and Red Rock are represented in this wonderful little podcast that Tyler and I do.
Well, and that also is going to shift our focus a little bit with the podcast. I know last season we were very heavy with the haunted attraction world and that type of themed entertainment. This next season and moving forward, we're going to shift this podcast to themed attractions overall. So anything from marketing and advertising and consideration of theme parks, family entertainment centers, haunted attractions, to your little, zoos, aquariums, museums, traveling shows, traveling exhibits, all of that thing, all that fun entertainment stuff. Philip, are you excited about this new format and this new transition?
I'm very excited because I'm still, you know, the editor-in-chief of our magazine, which is still focused on haunted attractions, and kind of looking at all of this and speaking with attraction owners and whatnot, I think a lot of people have this disconnect. You know, they don't understand the full picture in that haunted attractions are like a sub niche. You know, they are a very, very small niche within themed entertainment or themed attractions, which is, you know, within the attraction space as a whole. And there's a very big support system for attractions and for all of these individuals out there. And so Tyler and I think it's a very strategic move for us to kind of align with that as a larger industry and try and pull, you know, those of you that are working with haunted attractions together with those of you that are working marketing in these other spaces so that everybody can learn from everybody, because there's no monopoly on creativity. And I think it's just a very large space and everyone has stuff to learn from each other. And there's no reason why, you know, an aquarium can't learn a marketing technique that a haunted attraction is doing, or et cetera, or that someone's doing for a Christmas show. So that's Tyler and I's idea behind shifting the focus of this podcast a little bit.
And with that shifting focus, this means that we need to hear from you. You know, Philip and I are seeking your input as to what you'd like to hear, what you'd like to learn, and what you want to talk about with this podcast, with Marketing Monday. So, Philip, where can people get a hold of us to provide us some suggestions of where they'd like to see the show go?
Go to www.hauntedapplication.com. That's www.hauntedapplication.com as one word, no hyphens or anything. It's pretty simple. Hauntedapplication.com. That will direct you to our kind of our online survey form. And really what we're looking for is to get an idea as to what topics you would like us to cover. We covered a lot in season one, and Tyler and I have ideas, but we really want to shift this to helping you guys out a lot more actively. And we know that there's a lot of very unique challenges in this space. And Tyler and I have a lot of experience working, and Tyler, you know, especially working directly with clients in the space actively. So we want to help answer the questions you have. So one more time, www.hauntedapplication.com. Please go there and give us feedback as to what you want to learn about, and Tyler and I will do the research and put it together for you.
And I am so excited to hear from everybody with this new format, this new switch to covering all of the themed attraction world. I'm really excited, but don't hesitate, don't freak out, I guess is the word. We're not going to leave you empty-handed in this episode. So, Philip, would you want to talk about our little interview that we have?
A while back, I interviewed Scott Swenson about his new marketing approach to the Vault of Souls in Tampa. And Scott Swenson previously worked for Busch Gardens Tampa for about 15 years, is one of their creative directors there. And then he kind of retired to do his own freelancing work, to kind of expand his repertoire and work with a lot more people. So he works with a lot of attractions and helps people tell compelling stories. And I spoke with him before Vault of Souls had their 2016 season, and he had just some extraordinary things to say about marketing. It's very interesting. I know it'll teach you guys a lot. And the essence is, you know, the Vault of Souls is an elegant evening of fear. And he's looking for a very specific audience. He's looking for people that actually want to solve puzzles and to participate in the story. And that's not your, you know, that's not your regular event goer. You know, that's not somebody that just wants to sit and kind of be entertained. And so Scott spent a while figuring out how to get those type of people. And he talks about some of the different marketing techniques that he used, not only to, you know, draw attention to his event, but actually to weed out people that didn't need to be there. So a lot of his advertising techniques kind of only give clues and challenge people to solve puzzles to even find out what the event is. And it's just a great approach to that, and a great approach to differentiating yourself. So it's a great interview, and I know you all will learn something. And of course, Tyler and I can't leave you without any news. So we're going to discuss a little news topic here that Tyler and I both find very interesting. So this is from the article that we'll link to in the show notes. It's from The Verge. And the title is "Google Will Punish Sites That Use Annoying Pop-Up Ads." What do you think about this, Tyler?
It's a pretty bold move on the part of Google. You know, over the last year or so, Google has been changing their algorithm on the way they show searches, search results in Google's search window. And they've been going more towards a very mobile-friendly, a fast-responsive website. Because you have to think about what Google's end game is, and that is to create a better overall search experience for the user. And generally, users hate pop-ups, whether they are a spammy kind of advertising pop-up that is a separate window from the internet browser, or a like say an email sign up pop up that is within the website of the site they're on. So Google is now going to start, I guess punishing is kind of a harsh word, but that's literally what they're doing. They're going to start punishing websites that have pop-ups, especially these in-frame on website, like kind of like an email sign up or something like that, pop-ups by, what's the word I'm looking for, Philip?
They're just going to kind of like rank them lower, basically.
Yeah, they're going to throttle their search results, basically.
Yeah, and this is, I don't know, Tyler and I saw this and we just like flipped about it because it kind of is world shattering for attractions because so many attractions rely on getting customers onto an email list, and a lot of them use pop-ups to do that. And it's actually not clear as to exactly how they're going to differentiate what pop-ups. So it is entirely, it's still entirely possible that somewhere down the line you will get penalized for that pop-up email sign up. And especially those attractions or even those CVBs or et cetera, you know, that are trying to monetize by putting up advertising. You know, that is another, you know, pop-up advertising. That's another thing that will get you ranked lower. So this is a pretty big thing, I think, in the attraction industry. Definitely is going to require you to sit down with your team and discuss how much this is going to impact your website and what you need to change. Because I think it will impact most people that we're aware of.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just haunted attraction owners. I have been on the website for Walt Disney World and they had a pop-up on their website, and it was just promoting, you know, a discounted rate at their resorts. Click here for more information type of thing. But that is still a pop-up. And like Philip said, it's still unclear as to what Google will be considering, but I'm assuming this is what they're talking about. It is these in-window pop-up advertising strategies that is going to basically throttle their search results. Now, granted, Disney is still going to rank high in search, but this is big news. You know, anytime Google makes an announcement like this, it is kind of world-shattering, especially in the advertising and marketing world.
Yeah, so I'm going to read just this little to give you guys more context. For the most part, Google is targeting overlays that gray out the content beneath them to prevent you from reading a website either for a few seconds or until you find and very carefully tap a little X to dismiss them. These count regardless of whether they load immediately after a page is open or whether they appear after scrolling a certain distance. On top of that, it sounds like Google will also count ads that create the effect of a pop-up without actually being a pop-up by taking up most of the page after a site is loaded. So that's a lot of things.
That is a lot of things. So it makes me wonder, though, if Google is going to count like a user-activated pop-up. So if you actually have a place mark on your website that says like email sign up, and then that creates after you click it, if that creates a pop-up itself to have you sign up and then just keeps you on the homepage, I wonder if Google is going to rank against that, because everything else, and we've all been to websites where you're reading the news and you're scrolling down, and the minute your mouse starts to go back up to the top of the page, a pop-up appears, which is annoying, and I can see why Google is going to start, you know, quote-unquote, punishing those websites. But, like I said, it's unclear as to what the full effects are, but we will keep you updated as soon as we learn more on this.
And the changes will be going into effect on January 10th. So we're actually not that far away from seeing the results of this. And we really are just not going to know how exactly Facebook is implementing this until they actually do it. So that is our news for this short preview episode. And now we're going to go into our interview with Scott Swenson. And on behalf of Tyler and myself, we look forward to hearing what you all would like us to cover in the upcoming season. I have Scott Swenson on the line here, and Scott Swenson is the creative director for the Vault of Souls coming to Tampa this September and October. Scott is doing some tremendous things with the Vault of Souls and allowing guests to master and control the environment and engage and individualize their experiences and the story as a whole. This presents a very unique challenge from a marketing standpoint, because you have to make sure you're attracting the type of guests that would be interested in this and trying to convey to everyone the type of experience that this is, since it kind of sits in between a lot of the classic experiences out there. So Scott, can you talk to us a little bit about how you creatively directed this year's marketing efforts?
Well, the biggest challenge, this is our second year of the Vault of Souls, and the biggest challenge in our first year was, because it is relatively unique, an experience, we didn't quite know how to market it last year or where to target our advertising efforts and dollars. So this year, instead of marketing it like a haunted house, we're actually marketing it more like an elegant cocktail party or even a New Year's Eve style event or a New Year's Eve party. For example, we are not doing any billboards. We are not doing any outdoor marketing, with the exception of a 12 to 15 story tall banner on a high rise in downtown Tampa, which is just our Lucy icon. We're also doing what we're calling targeted apparitions. And what this is anywhere from 3 to 5 performers masked in white masks, wearing semi-formal wear and carrying black umbrellas, will walk to key locations in Tampa and just pose and hand out a small card which says, "Follow the Spirits, elegantfear.com." It's designed to hit where we feel that our core audience really exists. So they're showing up outside of art exhibits. They're showing up outside of the Tampa Theater. They're showing up at cult film festivals, just to sort of create a grassroots style approach. We're also advertising now in some of the more corporate high-rises. We're looking to try to get some folks to come in and do this as a group outing or a team building. Because it's an 18 and up event, it's one of those situations where we're not trying to get masses and masses of high school students to come, because this is not that kind of event. So we have to really focus and target our efforts a little bit differently. We've also, you know, completely rebranded the website to focus on the elegance and the creepiness. I think that last year, you know, all of our online presence made us look a little bit more like a standard haunted house. And that's probably because that's what I'm most comfortable with, because it's what I've done for, you know, 17, 18 years. But this year we really decided to focus on the elegant fear concept. And so everything now is, you know, elegantfear.com, and we're Elegant Fear on YouTube and Elegant Fear on Facebook. We've kind of rebranded the whole thing to focus on the poshness of the evening, so that people don't come expecting something different. You know, and don't misunderstand me, I love blood, guts, and gore haunted houses. I go to them myself, you know, even now, but that's not what this event is. So I just want to make sure that we get the right people in the door for this thing. So we've done a lot more grassroots. Yes, we've done some print advertising. We've taken the money out of television advertising and put it more into making appearances where we feel our target audiences are going to exist.
Not only did you go through and you kind of added the elegant word and that kind of iconography, rebranded everything, but you cut the TV because, like you said, you're going for a much more highly targeted group of people, I guess very much specific interest group and very specific age range. It's like there's no one like TV show or like spot that you could really target. It's not like as easy as targeting, like, you know, The Walking Dead or something like that. It would be too targeted for those. And so instead you're doing the physical experiences at key, like, high target interest areas. And it sounds like even in the messaging that you're sending out, you're trying to get people, you're not giving them everything. The cards that you're making, and in our previous interview, you had talked about even the email reservations when people book tickets. It's kind of counter, I think, to what a lot of marketing is, like, who, what, when, where, why type thing. And it's not really giving that. And that's, I think, another element of your strategy, right? Is trying to find people that are willing to look into what it is and that are curious enough, because you ultimately, I guess one of the primary qualities is the curiosity for puzzles and for things like this, and, you know, kind of drawn to the paranormal and curiosity and all those elements together.
Exactly. You know, we've said from the get-go, and we even said this last year, our whole marketing campaign is really designed to be a whisper campaign. We want to whisper tidbits and secrets, and we're going to let other people yell about it. The best marketers for us are people who have experienced the Vault of Souls. The people who came to it, had a great time doing it, and then they tell their friends. It's the basics of marketing. Everybody wants to have that word of mouth presence, and we are relying on that very, very heavily. And the way to do that is to make everybody feel as though, well, gosh, you know, I saw one of their ghosts at that XYZ art exhibit, or I saw one of the spirits when we went to see the cult film such and such and such. You know, the idea is, by making guests feel as though they've stumbled across something, they start talking about it significantly more. And, you know, we've come to the world with social media where we have all become a little bit more skeptical of traditional media, and we don't believe things are really good unless we see that somebody liked it on, you know, somebody posted on Twitter, they have a great tweet about it, or somebody put out something on Instagram, you know. So we're trying to capture those folks and get that kind of buzz, that personalized buzz going from the right people.
Are you doing any sort of paid advertising on social, or any sort of like type of referral program, or you're just relying on people sharing of their own volition?
We're doing quite a bit of paid advertising on social. Yeah, we are doing some traditional print media as well, like I said. But again, it's got to be in the right place. When we do appearances, we refer to them as targeted apparitions. So we basically allow the spirits to appear where we feel that our audience has gathered.
And what platforms are you using on social this year?
Facebook is our primary, mainly because the demographics of Facebook most match the demographics of the people that we're trying to reach. We are also using Instagram and Twitter, which skew a little bit younger, actually, as far as age demo. And then we also have launched a new Elegant Fear YouTube channel, which currently has 3 brand new videos on it that help explain things and intrigue people a little bit further.
Yeah, I am very curious, you know, Instagram kind of tending to be more of the, I guess, primarily, you know, I think it's 82% of millennials using Instagram. So it's a much more younger. What are you doing to differentiate your Facebook versus Instagram versus Twitter strategies?
Well, our Facebook, it's interesting because our Facebook actually has a voice of its own. The Facebook is the voice of the spirits inside, or inside the Vault of Souls. So they will, you'll never see anything on our Facebook page about, you know, come make your reservations right now. You're being invited to join them, or they're commenting on things that they have seen. For example, we had a really nice review on a website out of Orlando. When it hit the Facebook page, the voice of the page was, "The living speak so kindly of us." And then there was the link. So again, it's that almost, it's not really cryptic, but it's also not an aggressive voice. On Twitter, we're being very direct. It's, you know, XYZ is happening here. Don't miss this. It's happening there. And on Instagram, of course, when we do our apparitions, our targeted apparitions, we do post them on there just so people can see this wonderfully creepy image of these faceless characters in downtown Tampa spaces. Each one has a very specific approach. And then, of course, we're just using YouTube as our video server, so we can keep those out and about to whoever want to find them.
I love that strategy. It's a very, very, very good idea not to just be, you know, posting the same images at the same time to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, but to be allowing the spirits to control the Facebook from their voice, and then really putting your image assets on Instagram so that, you know, people can get a sense of the experience. Are you doing anything to kind of interact with the guests on any of the social platforms?
The spirits will quite often comment, and they did it a lot more early on when we had fewer followers on Facebook. The spirits will actually comment and welcome people by name. They will respond to people's comments and direction. In fact, quite often, the spirits will have to lead guests to our marketing director because they'll be asking specific marketing questions that the spirits wouldn't necessarily know. But we've tried to maintain, because, you know, we don't want to be jerks and say, you know, have a character say, I don't know that, and just leave you hanging. But they will redirect so that they don't get the answer from the spirits, but they get a redirect to someone who can help them and make those connections. What's really interesting is if you go to our Facebook page, you'll notice that the spirits are unable to use capitalization or punctuation. So everything is written in lowercase. And it gives them sort of a quieter voice, even in the back of your mind. So the Facebook page actually kind of plays a character as well, which I think is kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm browsing it right now. Actually, I'm seeing the images that you are describing from the spirits, the targeted apparitions, and I'm seeing the spirits comment and give kind of their impression of the articles that are being shared, all lowercase, etc.
Yeah, and people have responded to it very well. They're like, I love the fact that the Facebook page whispers at us. So I think that's like, yeah, you get it. Okay, cool.
So you're doing targeted apparitions and the banners, print media, you cut TV, then social media, what I'm assuming is a pretty big chunk of what you're doing in this scape of things. What type of organization system do you have set up? Because it's something we talk about a lot on this show, is managing all of this together, and especially since you're having your Facebook page play a character, and you're having your other social medias have very distinct voices. How are you managing all of this? Is there a team? Do you have the actors doing it? Is it one person that's switching? Are you using software to control everything? You know, how are you managing all these different components?
We're relatively low tech, so software is not managing it for us. I'm sure that would make it easier. We do have an internal team. Although we will cross over from time to time, there are certain people who predominantly handle, for example, the Twitter page, and certain people who predominantly handle the Facebook page. For example, I am the one who communes with the spirits to make sure that their words get heard on the Facebook page. That doesn't mean that there aren't other folks who may contribute to that from time to time, but I'm the primary spirit wrangler when it comes to Facebook. Our director of marketing is usually the primary voice on the Twitter page or on the Twitter account. And it makes sense, you know, as the creative director, my job is to maintain the integrity of the characters. So if I can maintain that integrity in the Facebook voice as well, it only makes sense that I'm the one who helps make those communications possible.
Mm-hmm. I really do like that division where you're working together with the marketing team to make sure that the message is carried across. And, you know, not only overseeing, I assume that you also oversaw kind of the creative direction of the ad copy and the print layout and all of that as well.
I am not the designer of it, but they definitely take my input very seriously. And I do kind of get to put my thumbprint on it as my check mark. Yes, let's do it. Let's go. They've been very, very kind to allow me to keep an eye on it because, again, they understand that the Wilson Company, who is the company that owns the Vault of Souls and runs the Vault of Souls, they totally understand that its impact is in its artistic nature. And to go out there and randomly throw out images or verbiage that is not necessarily in line with the experience is really just detrimental to us in the long run.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that idea of exactly how it should be. You know, even if you are, you know, working with a larger team, or in this case, you know, a different marketing team with your experience, there's open lines of communication between the creative director and the marketing team to make sure that all of the creative components mesh together with the marketing plan.
Absolutely. And in fact, in most cases, what will happen with like written copy, for example, I'll usually write the written copy first, and then I pass it off, and the marketing director quite often will translate it into marketingese to make a few, you know, key elements clearer than I necessarily would have. But it always comes back to me, and they always say, "How do you feel about this?" Or sometimes if they generate it first, she'll write something and she'll send it to me and goes, and we'll say, does this sound Scott enough? So that's pretty cool. We really do work well as a team. And I think that's the key to the success, is that we all understand the basic vibe that we're trying to get across to our guests, whether they're actually experiencing the event or just hearing about it. And we're all kind of speaking the same language and aiming for the same target. So that makes things really pleasant to work with.
Very briefly, can you discuss with us how you went about adjusting your ideal or your target audience from year one to year two? What did you see and what did you look at, and how did that change? Because it seems like a pretty big marketing shift between the 2 years. I mean, you shifted a lot of money around and you shifted a entirely new branding, and you seems like you got a much better, you know, idea of your ideal customer. So what did that process look like?
Well, you know, I'd love to say that there was all sort of various and sundry matrices that we looked at and blah, blah, blah. The truth of the matter is, I was at the event every night. I said goodnight to a majority of the guests as they left. I hung out on the third floor. I spent time in the gin joint listening to guests talk to me afterwards. I listened to the online chatter, both positive and negative, about the event. And thank goodness most of it was positive, so that was great. The number one rule of branding, in my opinion, is really, really simple. Your brand is not what you say you are. It's what your guests or your customers say that you are. So we just listened to what the customers were saying we were, and we liked it. So we decided to take that and run with it.
Excellent. I love that.
You can continue to try to bang something over people's heads, but until such time as you hear them echoing it back, you haven't been successful. So we decided, let's eliminate the middleman and make it successful, because they were telling us from the get-go.
Exactly. Well, and as I mentioned also in our previous interview, really focusing on how they're describing the event and not how you want to describe it. You know, like not like Grant, that may like the number one premier event in Tampa. You know, the most scary, or the, you know, most bloodless event. You know, like it instead of any of that, you know, you're listening to how your customers are describing you, and you are taking that, and then you are strategically weaving that into your brand message and your marketing, and letting that trickle down even into how you communicate with your customers.
Yeah, that's pretty much the goal. And 'cause let's face it, we've all heard the phrase that the customer's always right. Well, that's not 100% true, but their perception is always right. So why not listen to it and incorporate it into what you do?
Well, thank you so much for speaking with us today, Scott.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production. Achieve more with all our products at www.hauntedattractionnetwork.com.